Hello everyone and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast presented by NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project in collaboration with Shoshin Works, a global forum helping organizations and nations navigate ecosystemic transformation. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping society, industry, the economy, policy, and they are reframing how we build for resilient futures. Ecosystemic Futures investigates this expansive and hyper-connected paradigm and explores frameworks to help us achieve more beneficial futures. I'm your host, I'm Marco Annunziata, co-founder of Annunziata & Desai Advisors. I'm an economics PhD and the former chief economist and head of business innovation strategy at General Electric. Prior to GE, I worked in policy and in finance. So my expertise is at the intersection of global economic and financial trends with technology and innovation. And speaking of innovation, I'm delighted to welcome my guest today, who is Céline Roquet. Céline is a forward-thinking expert at the crossroads of technology, agriculture, and sustainability, with a strong academic foundation in molecular biology and plant physiology. She is a graduate of the Plant Institute of Biotechnology, who combines her scientific expertise with a passion for advancing sustainable solutions in agriculture and healthcare. Céline combines her scientific expertise with a passion for innovation and creativity. Her expertise extends to cutting-edge technologies, including vertical and indoor farming, genetic engineering, integrative biology and bioreactors, which together enable sustainable cultivation in resource-scarce environments and even in space. She's an expert in biodiversity, water conservation, and innovative approaches to resource management and technologies that are pivotal for sustaining life in extreme conditions on Earth and beyond. And beyond her scientific pursuits, Céline is an avid science fiction enthusiast and an author of sci-fi novels, weaving her imaginative storytelling with her vision for humanity's future. Her unique perspective bridges the gap between the realities of scientific innovation and the boundless possibilities of speculative fiction. Céline, welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Marco. I'm really happy to be there.
I've tried to do justice to your bio, but please, during our conversation, do feel free to tell us more about your journey and about what you're doing now. And in fact, I thought to start our conversation today is going to focus on plants and technology. And we will talk more about indoor farming, the innovations, all the expertise you have that I mentioned a moment ago, including the connection to space exploration, of course. But to break the ice, can you tell us and the audience how your interest in plants started?
Yes, of course. Well, it started a long, long time ago when I was 6, and I've been passionate.
Not so long ago.
Yes, it is. I've been passionate with plants, I mean, forever. And this is definitely the goal of my life. And well, life is strange because you start with plants and then you study science and then you go further in details into micro scale biology and microorganisms, genetics, biotechnology. And then, yeah, as you said, I'm really interested in the future more than in the past. So I'm really looking forward and, well, passion for plants then started to be combined with passion for future. And that's why science fiction too. And also with new technologies. And, you know, all this, you know, made something, I think, in my brain and really is my motivation in my work, but also personally. So I think my life is always around plants and new technologies and the future. That's why sustainability is also mandatory, because how can you imagine a future that's not sustainable?
Exactly. And this is why I wanted the audience to hear this, because what struck me in our previous conversation, Céline, is that you're a scientist, but you also, and your scientist was very forward-looking, clearly, but you have a very, very pragmatic attitude, which I like to think has probably started when you started loving plants when you were 6 years old. So let me ask you now something. I'm going to ask you to restate the obvious, just because sometimes we do need to be reminded of the obvious. Why are plants so important?
Well, plants are essential to life, first because it's the first link in the food chain. And without plants, there is no food chain. There is no herbivores. There is no carnivores. And we are both. So, I mean, without plants, we can't really exist. So this is just a matter of food, but it's not, it's quite important stake. So I think we'll talk about it later. And food, of course, is our first need, water and food. And also plants are really linked to these essential stakes and needs. And also we need to breathe, and plants are using CO2, carbon dioxide, and they produce some O2. So that's why they are also essential for us in terms of breathing and food and water management, but also healthcare. So, I mean, if you have all of this, you can leave.
Which is...
Live and leave, if we talk about space.
Both. Yes, exactly. Ensure our survival here and the conditions for exploring the rest of space and other planets. Now, it's a very good way to ground the conversation, Selina. And the next, what I wanted to ask is the following. So one of your areas of expertise is indoor farming. And I think before we delve into indoor farming, it's useful to set the context for the audience and remind everybody that food security is an important global issue. So we have a very large and still growing global population. We are exposed to climate shocks that sometimes can disrupt the crops and create problems across the world. So do you think that against this context of priority of food security, is indoor farming the silver bullet? Is it the solution to all problems, or is it the right solution for specific problems? How do you see it?
Well, as you said, food is a global issue, and we are all linked to this big issue. Two things that you mentioned. First is the resource, and well, the supply, and on the other hand, the demand. So in terms of supply, as you said, we are seeing even now every day, every year, some incidents, events, really catastrophical events linked to weather and seasonal disruption. And of course, these are impacting the cultures in the fields, I mean, and also the people who are working on these fields. So it's both environmental and social impacts first. And of course, it endangers the supply of food. So this is the first thing.
Perhaps, sorry to interrupt you, but I thought maybe it's also worth reminding ourselves that when these disruptive events happen, if you're sitting in the US as I am in Miami, or in Europe in Paris like you are, we see it in spikes in food prices. So we get hit because we see the increases in food prices. Mm-hmm. And the increase in food prices can already be quite harmful for people who are at the lower end of the income distribution. But it also has an impact on people who then face really scarcity and lack of food, so that the impact on other sections of the global population is much more dramatic.
Exactly. You're just spoiling the thing I wanted to talk about. That's fine. No, I mean, it's fine, but it's exactly that. I mean, when the supply is endangered, of course, it endangers the food for many people. And you talk about the US, of course, we'll see the prices getting higher, and it's a big issue for people with low income. For instance, but also in many emerging countries. For example, a country that's not autonomous in terms of food supply will be 100% or X percent dependent on other countries. And that's really, really dangerous, really risky. So it's a big risk for a country not to have this food sovereignty. And it can lead to really like riots or this kind, or even worse. I mean, yeah, endangering people and make, I don't know how we say, make it like not revolutions, but all these kinds of situations we can face.
Well, social unrest, even war, potentially.
Yes,
in some
war,
cases, yeah.
Civil war, yeah. This kind of events. And of course, we don't want this. And another aspect also is that since we have this cultivated fields scarcity and also biodiversity scarcity and water scarcity or flood, depends. And also we have the issue of urbanization, because the more we are in cities, the less we are in rural or countrysides where we can produce some food, cereals, vegetables, and food in general. So, of course, if we are all in cities, there will be a big issue with food. And also because we saw that with the COVID, supply chains can be really at risk. And we see also that with the geopolitical situation right now, and it will be the case in the future. So when the supply is not ensured and the supply chain is not ensured, and we are all living in big cities, food is really, it becomes more an issue, a challenge, than only a need. But of course, it's always a need.
No, so, and so indoor farming becomes a potential solution to bring some of the food production closer to the point of final consumption, right? And so you build, in a sense, you reduce also the supply chain risk, mm-hmm. and you increase food security.
Yes. First, we reduce the number of intermediates,
yeah,
which is great. Then we have hyper-local productions, which is really ensuring food supply. Mm-hmm. And also people say that we can't have enough food for all people coming from urban areas only. But if we look at cities, and it's the case in Paris, but in many other cities, when you look at all the roofs and warehouses and basements, I mean, we have a lot of surfaces to produce.
So in theory, it might not be the optimal solution, but in theory, you could imagine a big city being able to produce enough food within the city limits to support the population. So I know it's not optimal. I know there is an issue of diversity of the food supply, but what you're saying is that quite a lot of food can be produced even within a modern city.
Yes, but with big challenges, energy supply, water supply, also choosing, and it will be the same for space, choosing the varieties we are going to grow, because we have to think about nutrition versus surface of production ratio.
So why don't we take a step back, Selina, then, and explain to our audience how indoor farming actually works, how it's put together, and what the main technical challenges are.
Yes, of course. Well, first we have there are different technologies used as indoor farming. So it can be hydroponics, where the plants are in nutrient rich solution. Then you have aeroponics, where the roots are misted with a nutritional solution. And you have also aquaponics, which mixes aquaculture and also aquaponics and fish production. And there is a synergy between plants and fish, which is also very interesting. And in terms of indoor farming, the thing is that it's a controlled environment. And this is really enabling people to grow plants from different varieties, and also to manage the different parameters of growth, like temperatures, light, and light will be with LEDs and with a specific spectrum between red and blue lights, but also the day cycle, the ratio between night and day. So we can really stimulate the plant with this night and day cycle to make it flowering, for example, or not, these kind of situations. And while there are maybe 60 parameters we can play on with hygrometry, temperature, the wind, the nutrients, of course, and many, many different parameters that will lead to different situations for the plant. And what is interesting is to see how the plants are adapting to different situations, environmental situations. And that really helps to grow plants in extreme conditions, for example, or different situations in urban areas, but also in space. So we really want to explore all these opportunities.
And you mentioned earlier, if I'm not mistaken, that what becomes important is also the choice of what plants to cultivate, right? Because I think you said that some plants will adapt better, some others will adapt not so well. And so then does it become a trade-off or an optimization problem where on the one hand you look at which kinds of plants are easier to cultivate with these technologies. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you also look at what do we cultivate them for? So is it for biodiversity? Is it because they have medicinal properties? Is it because of their nutritional properties? What is the right way of looking at this multidimensional issue?
Yes. Well, plants are giving what we call as human beings ecosystemic services, but these are not services. It's the way we use them, but it's called that way. So yes, we talked about food. Of course, there is food and we need to select plants that are the most nutritious and interesting for human health and survival. For example, you know, germinated seeds are very rich in nutrients, these kind of little baby plants. But also we can have some other plants with a high nutrition profile. Some example, lentils or leguminous plants. Yeah. These kind of plants that are really, really important for our nutrition. And also, besides food, you can grow plants for different uses, such as medicinal botanicals, because some plants are really rich in active molecules that have medical interest. So we could definitely grow them for medical and healthcare. Yes, for sure. And then you can grow some plants for other uses. And now in the market, actors, both in R&D or in business, they are focusing on specific needs. Some are working on food, others on medicinal plants.
And so in terms of the constraints, energy you mentioned earlier clearly is an important, but not necessarily a constraint, but it's an important input. Yes. To this process. I imagine water as well, which probably has some implications depending on where this indoor farming is conducted. Anything else that constrains the possibility of developing these technologies? And also, I was curious, can you give us a sense of how technologies for indoor farming have evolved over the last several years?
Yes, so they have evolved specifically on these topics, because the main challenges are the resources. Mm-hmm. Resources are biodiversity, energy and water, and nutrition. So it's a continuous improvement of these technologies since the 60s. I mean, this period of between 60s and 90s, and then since 2000, and more specifically the past 5 years, 10 years, it's evolving very fast, especially on energy and water. But now with water, we can really work and manage systems that are autonomous in terms of water, because you put some water in the first place and then it's a loop, and the water you can really get the water from the transpiration of the plant and put it back in the system. So it's a loop, and really you don't need so much water.
So it becomes really a contained ecosystem. Very interesting.
Yes, it is. It is. And now, of course, there are some challenges about energy and technologies are evolving with LEDs and other AC and the way we can manage the system. But since it's a challenge, especially if we think about space.
And speaking about space, tell us how, frame it whichever way you think is most useful for us. How are we thinking? How are experts like you thinking about how we can deploy indoor farming technologies in space exploration? How does it fit in the space exploration picture?
I mean, I can really imagine it quite well. of course, because we will need these plants in terms of even well-being for the astronauts. I mean, we need these plants around us in terms of food. And as I said, really selecting the right varieties and optimize them so we can get enough food. I mean, if we grow some salads, it won't fit, then it won't meet the needs. Okay, we can't feed a whole colony in Mars with salad. Okay, it won't be enough.
We have. And I would definitely not want to go to Mars in that case.
Okay, salad and strawberries for the moment. But now we have to to think about exactly with what plants we want to grow as food, but also as healthcare. So which ones are the most potent and useful in space. So this is one of the constraints. And of course, thinking about self-managing system as much as possible, mm-hmm. of course. And also there are some constraints in space like radiations, gravity or lack of gravity. So this needs to be studied and experimented, of course.
What is the state of play right now? What do we know we can do, or what are we trying to do? Are we taking on current space missions? Are plants being taken along? Are plants being cultivated? What is happening right now?
For the moment, we focus on leafy plants because it's easier, and we try to find the models. And then when we have the right model, we can try different things. I just saw this morning an article about experiments on some plants that can grow directly on moon regolith in French, moonstones.
Stones, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And, but apparently it didn't work on the Mars stones. So, you know, it's really evolving. I mean, every day we see some progresses. So it's really evolving. Maybe we can have a podcast in 3 years and see how it's
going. See where we are. Yes. These are experiments that are being conducted mostly on Earth, or have we started conducting some of these experiments out in space as well?
Also out in space in the ISS, for example. Yeah. Yes. Also in space.
Very, very, very interesting. It's interesting also the point you were making, which is plants will be important in this context, not just for nutrition, but also for medicinal purposes. And I think it's quite an important twist in our space exploration, because we're no longer thinking of taking just as much as possible in the constraints of a spaceship, but yes, thinking of in this case, systems that can then grow. It's also in line on beyond the agricultural side, technologies that are being developed together with 3D printing to allow astronauts to then build things in space. So we're thinking more and more in terms of creating self-sufficient ecosystems outside of Earth.
Okay, so 2 points I want to add, if I may.
Absolutely. You must.
First thing is, you talk about 3D printing and creating. This is a whole scientific exploration about creating new organisms, creating new plants. We have talked about existing plants, which is huge. Okay, which is huge. And we have a great choice already. But we can also work on integrative biology in also synthetic biology, and this is a whole new area to be explored. So this is something I wanted to add. And the other thing is, if we go in space and on Mars or Moon or beyond biodiversity. You mentioned it several times and I didn't talk about it, but biodiversity is also about plants, because we can really have some seeds banks or taking with us the most important or interesting plants with us as seeds or cuttings, but seeds would be more convenient, and to go in space, to travel in space. I mean, that would be the future of the Noé Ark. And Yes, not only animals, but plants also. If we move with our plants.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Noah's Ark, because the first time you had mentioned it to me in our conversation before, I found it striking, because it's true that the original Noah's Ark story, the attention is all focused on saving the animals from the flood. And there seems to be this underlying assumption in the story that the plants will take care of themselves, because even Noah must have thought that, hey, if no plants survive, my nice collection of animals on the ark is not going to be very useful when this is over.
Exactly.
I thought it was a very interesting point that tells us how easily we end up taking plants for granted instead of thinking of how important they are, and therefore the efforts we must do to make them part of our ecosystem as we think about space.
Yes, and also because we need to adapt to survive and to travel far, far away from our galaxy. So we need to adapt, and plants have great potential of adaptability. And that's something we really can count on, because of course we can help them evolve and select them and make them grow in specific ways, but they have this huge potential of adaptability. And we see it even now with the climate change. We see that many plants are evolving.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the thing, right?
Too.
Exactly. That's a very, very important point. So I mentioned at the beginning your interest in science fiction. You love science fiction. You write science fiction. So tell us a bit, how does your passion for science fiction help you see the future? How, you know, from a science fiction writer perspective and connecting it to your work, how do you think about our future outside of Earth 20, 25, 30 years? I haven't read any of your novels yet, so I don't know how far ahead you're thinking in your science fiction, but give us that perspective.
Well, we can imagine so many different futures, and I want to believe that biotechnology and biology and plants, of course, but also microorganisms will be key in our survival and in the future. But I also like new technologies a lot, and the way we can combine both technologies and AI and IoT and also biotech, and also all the science and biology, scientific sectors linked to human being. Of course, all this has to be thought all together. Mm-hmm. And really, it leads to many stories we can tell, we can imagine. And hopefully it won't be too dark.
Hopefully not. So do you see us, you have strong confidence that in the future, no matter how far, we will be settling on Mars or some other planets and start our way of building new ecosystems, cultivating plants, developing new plants. You see this in the future?
I don't see in the future. No, sorry. But... That really, yes, I wouldn't have said yes 5 or 10 years ago, but writing sci-fi and working in biotechnology and see all the potential and see also all the progresses in space exploration. I mean, I saw today that there could be nuclear engines to go to Mars and come back and all that. So, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't have agreed 5 years ago, but now it's changing so fast, the technologies, the investments, and the long-term vision on both space exploration and biotechnologies. I mean, yeah, we can definitely imagine such things, yes.
It's becoming much more plausible. I loved it when your answer was, no, I can't see the future, because it reminds me once when I was being interviewed for a job years ago, and they told me, you know, since I work in economics and strategy, they told me, we need somebody who can help us see around corners. And I, much like you, I said, I can't see around corners. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody can.
Yes, but I mean, the thing is, we can try to imagine all the corners possible.
Exactly.
And get prepared. Yes.
That is exactly it. Selina, you are now working with a French startup called Tower Farm. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's a French startup that has started in 2019 with food. I mean, vertical farming. So vertical is really in columns where you have plants growing with aeroponics. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you are in the economics. It's not my part, but it's
everybody's part. Everybody is allowed to view in economics.
Of course, we are all no matter what, we are all in economics. But they have started in food production, and then they just saw that the supply and the demand were not, I mean, it was not meeting the needs, well, in France, of what we, there was no need here. But in other areas in the world, like in the Gulf countries, in the Middle East, and desertic countries, it's different. But coming back to Tower Farm, they have evolved and what to say,
pivoted.
Yes. And 2 years ago, we changed the direction and really focused on medicinal plants for the pharmaceutical, cosmetic, and nutraceutical industry. So, and now it's different because we are producing added value plants and really working on integrative biology with the genetics at the beginning, and then working on the growth of plants and all the different ways it can adapt, what we call epigenetics, expressing the different genes depending on the environment, and producing these active pharmaceutical ingredient, what we call APIs, for these industries. And now we see that the market is changing. 2 years ago, it was not the trend. I mean, the companies were not prepared and able to change the way they were working and switch to this kind of production. But now it's different because of climate change, geopolitical issues. You can't source or supply a plant coming from specific countries. And also the fact that we can produce all year round, not depending on seasons or weather. And this changes a lot. And also because it's more sustainable in a certain way. When you calculate the life cycle analysis, you see that it's really interesting in terms of sustainability.
That's very, very, very interesting. So is it targeted to specific areas of the pharmaceutical industry? Is it across the board? Is there a specialization?
Yes, it's specialized and on specific plants, of course. And some plants are really promising for huge topics of medical trends. And they are, yes, there are some big health issues in the world, and we can really provide some solutions based on these productions. But of course, it's specific. I mean, it's not the whole pharmaceutical industry, which is more based on chemicals.
But you raise an interesting point, because it's not just an issue of, if I understand you correctly, it's not just, the value is not just in ensuring a more resilient and flexible supply of ingredients, of active ingredients that are needed by the pharmaceutical industry, but it's also the possibility of enabling more innovation in the pharmaceutical industry, so actually accelerating the developments of new pharmaceutical products. And so it's something, the innovation that with Tower Farm you guys are doing is something that can actually accelerate progress in healthcare innovation as well.
Yes, and also because producing plants in vertical farming it represents lower pressure on soil and biodiversity. If you take Centella asiatica, for example, which is a plant found in Madagascar, if you grow it with our density, which is about 180 plants a square meter, of course, it's less, well, there are other issues with the plant in fields, especially because it grows widely and not cultivated. Mm-hmm. But yes, of course, it's very good for, in terms of soil artificialization and biodiversity. But of course, it has to be done in partnerships with countries where the sources is coming from.
Exactly. That's fascinating. So yeah, if we look forward to the issues of food security and biodiversity, you are at the center of the progress being made from a technological perspective to address these issues. What do you feel are the most important challenges that we need to overcome to achieve these objectives?
You mean on Earth?
Yes, I think you're on honor. Yes, I brought you back down to Earth. Yes.
Okay. Just okay. Landing back. Challenges will be really on energy and water and the improvement of technologies and the way it will be integrated in our daily lives, mm-hmm. which is not the case right now, not yet. So,
integrating our daily lives, you mean?
Business-wise and also in cities, in buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And all this. So, and also it will evolve quite fast, I think, because of AI, for example. It will help a lot for prediction and to grow plants with the best systems and the best processes. So new technologies will be really helpful to make indoor farming systems evolve and improve, for instance.
Yeah. This has been a fantastic conversation. So we talked about biodiversity, food security, we talked about indoor farming, vertical farming, we've gone up into space and come back to Earth. Is there something that we should have covered and we didn't get to?
Well, we talked about sustainability and geopolitical stakes a little bit, and that will be also a stake, something important to take into account. Investments and who will be leader in this kind of technologies and how it will be used and for whom. And also maybe the cultural adaptation, especially in extreme environment that can be space, but can be just extreme environments on Earth, because maybe we'll have to change our food preferences or way of not finding food, but they are the way what we're going to eat. Yes. And also it's, as I said, it's a mix of different technologies, mix of different knowledges, and it's really a cross sector collaboration. And we know that in business, it's not the easiest thing to do. Okay. So that could be a real challenge. Mixing all the different disciplines and science knowledge, know-how, and all that.
It's a very interesting point because as came up from your insights, Selina, these kind of technologies like indoor farming are also a valuable response to a trend of fragmentation that we're seeing in the world. From a geopolitical perspective, there is more protectionism, there are more conflicts, so there is more geopolitical fragmentation, and hence the local food security becomes more important. But you're pointing out a different kind of fragmentation, which is business and to some extent scientific fragmentation that could slow down the progress if we don't take a more ecosystemic approach to make these things work together. You also raised the question of who will lead this revolution. Are you seeing, you're based in Europe, in France, are you seeing differences in terms of which countries are more interested in these agri-tech innovations, or is the interest more or less widespread, especially across Europe, the US?
Well, as you know, innovation comes with constraints. Mm-hmm. That's why space is interesting, because it's full of constraints. Exactly. And that's why it leads to innovation. And same on Earth. I mean, all the innovation is coming not only, but mainly in countries where the constraints are higher. Yeah. Northern Europe for production, but also Middle East and desertic areas. And it's exactly what I said about terraform in food production in France. We don't need it. Mm-hmm. So if there is no constraint, no issue, there is no problem to, no solution to find. So if there is no problem, there is no solution. But in areas where there are some constraints and issues, of course, we have to be solution-minded, solution-oriented. And yeah, this can lead to many, and it's leading to many innovation and solutions right now.
No, that's exactly right. There is a saying in Italian, I don't even know if there is the equivalent in French or in English, but essentially it says that, which is necessity sharpens the mind. And it's exactly what you've been saying. Saida, this has been a fantastic conversation. What is the main message, the one thing that really you want to make sure the audience takes away from our conversation?
Be curious, explore, and test, and learn.
Excellent. It's a fantastic note to end on. Selina Roque, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. And of all our audience and listeners, if there is somebody out there who's an agent or a publisher in the science fiction area, I would suggest you contact Selina, because I think there is something very interesting there. Selina, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Marco.
And thanks everyone for joining us today. Please check out this season's new episodes as we continue to explore the convergence of innovation, technology, and new business models, and how the convergence is reshaping industry and what it means for our ecosystemic futures. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, or you can always learn more or apply to be a guest speaker at shoshinworks.com. Thank you, everyone.